We have the mitzvah that we mentioned last week of the mother bird. I.e., when you see a mother bird, when you see a bird and you see her eggs, the pasuk says, Shaleach tishalecha ta'im, Devarim chafbet pasuk zayin, send away the mother, the etabanim, and the child. Tikach lach, you can take for yourself. L'mani tavlach v'arachta yamin. So it will be good for you, and you'll have long days. You have this mitzvah, when you have a bird, you can't eat the bird and the baby together, and if you do that, what's the reward?
Long
life. Okay, so what are some questions that pop out at us when we see this pasuk? Yeah?
Why would just a simple mitzvah marry long life?
Awesome. It's kind of strange. It's pretty easy. What's the connection between this and long life? You would think, like, you know, really, really hard one, like, I don't know, Shabbos. That makes sense, but sending a bird away, why does that specifically merit long life? That's a great question. What else? First of all, actually, does anybody have a suggestion? Anybody have an answer for that? Why would Shiluach HaKen specifically get you long life? Really good question, right?
Mercy.
Any answers?
Mercy for the bird.
Mercy for the bird, therefore what?
If you have mercy for other... Oh my God. For other creatures in the world, then Hashem will have mercy on you and give you a rachamim.
I love it. It's a great answer, Jared. I'm not going to go for that, but that's a beautiful answer. Jared's saying, if you have mercy on others, God will have mercy on you. Excellent. Okay. Any other... We're going to offer a different perspective. Any other questions which jump up at you when you see this pasuk of sending away the mother bird when you take the chicks? You take the egg.
Why say the reward?
Why say the reward, right? Why do sometimes you get rewards and sometimes you don't get rewards?
This is a random one for it to say the reward.
Right, that's kind of the same question we asked before. It seems kind of random. Good. Very good. What else? Anything else interesting? Look at the wording. I mean, I guess you don't have it in front of you.
If you're the kind of person that would do that for a small animal, that you're the kind of person that also treats other people kindly, people will treat you more kindly.
Awesome. So that's kind of along the lines of what Jared was saying, that it's like a consequence. If you're that type of merciful person, people will be kind to you, and you'll have a long life. Okay, great. Now, why? Some of you have already kind of suggested it, but why do we do this mitzvah? Now, of course, we had a shir last week. We don't know why. Ultimately, only God knows. But we can guess. We can do our best to try to figure it out. And there are basically two main approaches of the Rishonim. Let's see if you guys can... what do you guys think? What are your perspectives on why we have this mitzvah? Yeah, Julie.
So the mother bird doesn't see her child being taken. Have mercy on the mother bird.
To have mercy, in other words.
Yeah, the mother bird just won't leave the nest unless you just shoo her away.
Awesome. So Julian is giving the suggestion that, you know who else gives that suggestion? The Rambam. The Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, we saw this last week in Mishmar, suggests that the Torah is trying to educate us to be kind and not cruel, to educate us. Even though we said we don't really know the reasoning for the mitzvah, so the Rambam says, we can guess that it's trying to instill us within a certain degree of compassion. Okay. Any other suggestions as to what the reasoning for this mitzvah might be? So the Ramban has a different suggestion. Okay, Nachmanides. He says, it's not about mercy for the child. Rather, it's a different idea. There are two generations here. There's the mother generation, and then there's the child generation. To eat both of them together is kind of like a lack of caring about the environment. It's kind of like species extinction. Not actually species extinction, but it's like you're saying, oh, I don't care, we'll just wipe them all out because I'm hungry. So the Ramban says we have to be sensitive to the environment, and therefore, to educate us this, we don't kill the mother and the child together. Yeah? You guys hear the two perspectives, Ramban? Both fascinating, but they both have actually some critical flaws in these theories. Can anybody think of a question, a bam kasha, on this theory that the Torah is trying to educate us to not be cruel with this mitzvah? What kasha can we ask on this?
I mean, you're still taking away the mother's child, so how is that still not cruel?
Okay, so you're saying you're still killing the children, so okay, you shoot her away, but like the Torah really wants us to care, then, you know, we should not kill them at all. But you could argue, Yonatan, okay, the Torah allows you for the sake of eating to kill them. It just doesn't want you to do it in this. It doesn't want. It allows you for the sake of humanity to eat chicken, to eat eggs. Just don't go overboard. So you could answer that, I think. Yeah.
There's other birds. I mean, it's just, you're not like destroying generation. There's like a bazillion other birds around. Why is it that big deal?
So that's a question on the Ramban. Yeah. Ramban, that, you could ask I think the Ramban takes more of this symbolically. Symbolically, it's like. But here's a shiloh guy. Here's a kasha. If it's really true that we shouldn't kill a mother and a child together, then what else should be forbidden?
Also,
having eggs and chicken together.
Eating eggs and chicken, that's true. But what about. Yeah?
What about other animals?
Exactly! Has anyone ever thought of that question? It's a really good question that Idan asked.
What is it?
What about other animals? Ooh, if the Torah really wants us to not be cruel, then you shouldn't be allowed to have a cow and its son together either. Okay? Why only by birds? That doesn't seem to make sense. If God wants us to not be cruel, then it should be a general situation. Good question, right? You guys hear the Shaila? 1 to 10, how would you rate the Shaila?
A 9.7.
9.7. But you asked Akasha, you're kind of biased.
An 18.
Yeah, Daniel.
Strong.
I think it's because of the relationship between mother and labor. Most animals, like a calf, can be raised without its parent. Can be raised and broken without it. Mm-hmm. As opposed to birds, they can't learn to fly without the mother.
Okay. Awesome. Okay, so that might be one direction. We're going to head towards that direction, but like they're saying, the relationship between the mother and the child might be a little different with a bird, and therefore we're more compassionate to the birds. Okay, very possibly. Any other suggestions as to why we would? What specifically is it about the bird that we would want to have compassion towards the bird? Okay, so think about it like this. By the way, this is not my chiddush. This is again Rabbi Forman's. Excellent, Rabbi David Forman's excellent shot. Okay. Yeah, you have a suggestion?
It's a lot easier for a bird to reproduce. I mean, think about it. It's an egg. How long does that take to make?
Same thing.
Yeah, but I think a cow takes.
But in that case, Julian, shouldn't we be more then we should care more about the cow and be chill about the bird?
No, so then does it have purpose then? So you do consider
the dance. You're saying Dafka.
It's to compensate.
Ah, I hear. Guys, you hear Avi's answer? Avi's suggesting Dafka because birds can easily, the Avi-Julian combo, because they can have children so easily, the Torah goes out of its way to say it's true with the bird, and we should infer from that it's also true with other animals, that we should have this compassion. Perhaps. I think there's actually a textual link to a different mitzvah, which can lead us to figuring out this puzzle. Okay? But before we go there, I want to ask you the following question. Has anyone here ever tried to catch a bird? Yeah.
And was successfully catching a bird?
Yeah. Has anyone... How was that for you? Was that easy for you? Jared, was it easy for you to catch that bird?
Well, I just rode a bike straight at it and then jumped off the bike and onto the bird, so not too difficult.
Once the canvas
is out,
I'm
going to
nail that bird in the face with his bike.
Actually,
did anyone else ever try to catch a bird? Did anybody else ever try to catch a bird?
You know, like one bird in a hand equals two birds hit by a bike?
Yes, very difficult.
It is very, very difficult, guys, to try to jump after birds. It's really hard. So how is it that we are going to, how could it be, guys, that a person is going to is going to chance upon a bird and be able to catch this bird? How is it that we're going to be able to get this bird? How's that going to happen, guys? In what scenario will it be relatively easy? Guys, that rock is really, really hard. I really don't want to scream over you. Guys, respect. How easy is it? It's not easy at all, but in what situation will it actually be relatively easy to catch the bird?
If there's an egg. I think it's just an egg. If she's protecting her
eggs. If she's protecting her eggs. If she's hovering over her eggs in order to protect her eggs, then what are you going to be doing then? You're going to be using her maternal instincts of protecting her eggs against her. Now that is what the Torah is saying is cruel. Instead of... to kill someone is one thing, but to use the motherly instincts against her, that is completely cruel, and that is what the Torah is instigating against. You hear the concept, guys? You hear the idea? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now we're ready for the next step, and this is even cooler. There's one other mitzvah, a very famous mitzvah, which also has a reward, which is to have lengthy days. To have arich latyamim. Oh, Julian said it. The other mitzvah that we have is in Shmot Chaf Yovet.
Idan was
going to
say it also.
Idan, you get an extra candy. Kabed Avich Le'Adimecha L'man Yarichun Yamecha. Now, we asked before, it seems so random. What's the connection between one of the Ten Commandments, respecting your parents, getting long days, and getting this mother bird having long days? But can anyone here see a connection?
Mother.
Oh, they're both about this maternal or paternal aspect, about respecting that motherly or fatherly aspect. This mother or father are willing to do anything for you, right? Just like God. We're not going there yet.
Papa Bird.
Just like God. God's a woman.
That's a good question. Why isn't Papa Bird involved? But you hear the concept? By the mother bird. We have to respect him. Because you can't use those maternal instincts against her. We have to respect life. We have to respect the one who gives life. We have to respect the source of life. And if you respect the source of life, what does God promise you? You will be connected to the source of life and you will have lengthy days. What's the other mitzvah where that comes into play? Kibud av ve'em. Generally we say, oh, you should respect your parents because they raised you, they did your diapers, they were so nice to you, and that's absolutely true. But maybe here the Torah is stressing a different aspect. Your parents are willing to do everything for you. It's just built in within you that they love you so much. Don't take advantage of that. Don't misuse that and just throw it away and say, I'm going to do whatever I want and I'm going to take advantage of my parents. I'm not going to treat them with respect. I'm going to take their credit card and not show them that respect. That's completely a distortion. But if you do tap into that reality, you will be connected to the true reality of life, the source of life, and you will merit lengthy days. You hear the connection? Pretty cool, no? Pretty awesome. Again, not my word, Rabbi Foreman's, but I've heard it actually from all over the place.
Foreman, like Aleph Beta.
Yeah, Aleph Beta. Yeah. If you get nothing else out of this year, it would be that to get you guys hooked on Rabbi Foreman, and he's just awesome.
Well, that's what he's doing about
Yeah, awesome. Okay, for the next 10 minutes, if I still have you, I'm not going to go long, don't worry. I wanted to quickly switch to a different topic. I know Rabbi Bayer already mentioned this, I heard, but some of you guys heard it, some of you guys didn't. And that's the topic of the hated wife. I want to show you one more really cool word on the Parsha. Okay? So, we have this Parsha, in this week's Parsha, the strange story of the man who has two wives. One he loves, and one who he hates. And the obvious question is,
why hate her?
Why does he hate her? And why would the Torah refer to her as hater? And why do you marry someone who you hate? It's very strange. Right? Very, very strange. So, I think some of you heard before that there's one other case in the Torah where we encounter someone who's called a hated wife. Yeah, and is that? That's a different story. But in the Chumash. Yeah.
Is it 1, 2, 3? Leah!
Jinx!
Awesome.
Awesome. Awesome. Good job. So the Torah says in Chavtet, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayar Hashem Kisnu Aleah. Leah was hated, and so God gave her children. So the question is, are there other links, now that we've already found the word link between Leah and our Psukim, are there other links between the situation described in the Torah and the Leah Rachel situation? So what are the other links, guys? What else links up the Yaakov Leah scenario to our portions?
The Bechor.
The Bechor aspect. Again, just to review, the Torah tells us that if you are married to a beloved wife and a wife you hate, and the hated wife has the Bechor, You have to give the firstborn rights to the Bechor. You can't favor the one you love. That's not right. So even though that's exactly what happened in the Yaakov Leah story, right? Where Yaakov favors Yosef, the son of the daughtered wife, of the favored wife, over Reuven, the son of the hated wife. Okay? So now that we've gotten these facts down, to make it even more clear, the Torah refers to it. Why do you have to respect this Bechor? Who Reshit Ono? He is the first of your womb. Who else is referred to as Reshit Ono in the Torah?
So
wait, hold on. Who else is referred to as Reshit Ono in the Torah? Yeah.
Reuven.
In Bereishis 49:3, the Torah says.
3 it says. Okay. So
Mem Tet Gimel. I have it in the source sheet. The Torah refers to Reuven also as a Reshit Ono. Okay. So, and to make it even wilder and crazier, there's a certain word linkage that the Torah is making here. The Torah says, listen carefully. Ki et ha-bechor ben asnu'a yakir. If the firstborn child you will recognize, latet lo pishnaim, to give him double, v'chol asher yimatze lo, and everything you will find in him, ki hu reishit ono lo mishpat ha-bechor. You have to find in him, give him the firstborn rights, because he deserves those firstborn rights. Now that language of ki yakir and yimatse is very weird, strange language. Is there anywhere else in the Torah where we've heard this language of yakir and yimatse? Anybody remember where else in the Torah it's come up, this language of yakir? Yeah, Terry?
And the brothers ask Yaakov if he recognizes the Ketanah Pasuk.
Awesome! When the brothers present in
Hakernah,
do you recognize this Yaakov?
That's Vayeshev.
That's right, Vayeshev 37:23. Torah says, "Vayikasher vayosef elachiv efshito yosef et kutanto etos sanim asher alav." And the Torah says, "Zot matzanu." This is what we have found. Hakernah. The exact same two words of mitziah and hakara are used both in the Yosef story and in the Torah's description of the Bechor rites. This is all wild and crazy, nuts. And now I guess the question is, so what? What do we make of this? What is the Torah subtly trying to imply? Guys, again, trying to make sure everyone gets a little bit nervous. I just want to make sure gets around older brothers. I don't have an answer for this, but I want to hear what you guys have to think. What is the Torah's subtle message, or not so subtle message, by linking these two stories together? What's the Torah trying to teach us? What do you guys think? Guys, what do you think? What is the Torah trying to teach us by linking these stories together?
Well, Yosef was the...
I'll go to you in a second, John. Yeah.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Yosef is in the same position. Yosef was the son of the favored wife and he wasn't the firstborn.
And therefore what? What's the Torah trying to teach us by?
The repercussions of that, you doing that, might be what happened to Yosef, which is that they're going to hate him, they're going to kill him.
Okay, so you're saying the Torah is trying to kind of blame Yaakov?
No, I'm saying it's a cautionary tale.
It's a cautionary tale, but who what is it cautioning against? Who's it cautioning? So according to Julian, he's saying that Yaakov unfairly favored his favorite wife. And is cautioning against the result in a very real way. It's telling you what happens when you have this favoritism. John, you wanted to suggest something?
I was just going to say that a way to not have a favorite wife is to not have one of them wife.
That definitely.
Yeah.
In fact, every time in the Torah that we have polygamous situations, there's trouble. There's always trouble. No, definitely not the ideal to have more than one wife. Practical advice for the week. Don't take more than one wife. Okay, good. That's true. What else? What else do you guys take out of the fact?
Anything you hear
too. What is the Torah implying when it links these two stories? So, Chevra, I'm going to suggest the following, and I think this is a very nice idea to take away for our lives. Very often in life, I know and I'm sure many of you have also felt this, feel forced into a kind of situation. Kind of like unfairly placed somewhere. For example, your boss was really mean to you. I don't know. And because your boss was really mean to you, you kind of justify treating maybe your coworker or someone under you not as nicely or giving him extra responsibilities because you feel like consciously or subconsciously you've been given the short stick. Right? That happens a lot. A lot of times we don't treat people as ideal because we're kind of caught up in our own type of situation. Right? To me, that's exactly what happened in the Yaakov story. Right? Why would it be that Yaakov might justify to himself to doing this favoritism, favoring Yosef over Leah's children? Why might Yaakov do that? How could Yaakov, such a tzaddik, justify consciously or subconsciously why he's favoring his not firstborn child? Yeah, done.
Because he was doing it in respect for Rachel, because he felt bad that she was not able to have any children.
Okay, she wasn't able to have more children. That's true. But what else? Why? How did he end up getting Rachel in the first place? Yeah.
He worked for 7 years or so for her, and then he was.
Tricked,
and then he had to marry the wrong person.
Exactly. Nice. So, in other words, I decided to make it a rule. Ice cream's an exception.
Oh, why you go for that one?
Strawberry.
You like banana?
Okay, Hebra. We're gonna here's the idea. Holy Brooks, you with me?
Yeah.
So it's like this. Yaakov was tricked, guys. He was deceived. He worked so hard for Rachel. He just wanted Rachel, and he ended up having to work more years, and he ended up kind of getting stuck with a wife that he didn't really want. So probably, my guess is... What?
Probably made him a better husband.
Maybe. But the point is that Yaakov might have justified himself favoring Yosef, Rachel's child, because he was tricked in the first place. He was put into an unfair situation. And that led to all these terrible results, where the brothers felt this favoritism, and they didn't confront their father, and there was no communication, and they ended up selling their brother. We had this whole terrible scenario that we're going to probably keep coming back and forth to as one of the biggest stories in the whole Torah. And Yaakov, it all really started when Yaakov felt tricked. But he wasn't able to kind of stop and say, wait, okay, I was tricked. That doesn't mean it's okay for me to mistreat somebody else and not love Leah and not love her children in the right way. And that's what led us down this path. So to me, these psukim linking us back to the Yaakov story is telling us to not make that mistake that Yaakov made of taking our mistreatments off on those around us, which we do all the time. A lot of times we'll get angry at someone and we don't even realize that it's really because of 2 hours later my teacher wasn't nice to me, this or that, and we just kind of explode. But it's really something completely separate. So my blessing for us all, if we can take one practical lesson out of this Parsha Shir, is that the next time we're maybe going to get doing something and getting upset or, you know, reacting, to stop and to really ask of myself, am I maybe treating somebody else less than ideally because of what somebody else did to me? And if so, let me stop and refocus. And the second lesson is that the Torah is really, really cool. And if we read the psukim really carefully, we'll see all sorts of textual links and all sorts of hidden stories under the table, which have all sorts of awesome messages. And that was our first super parsha shot. And can't wait till next week. Also, one technical halachic announcement. When with